Thank you, Judge Pirtle, Judge Bishop. May it please this honorable court, if I could reserve 4 minutes of time. Counsel, Ms. Johnson, Mr. Shanker. Good morning. My name is Matt Hamus, and I have the privilege of representing Pamela and Thomas Russell in this matter. We are here today asking this court to reverse an order of the district court wherein it granted summary judgment to Franklin County. We ask that this court adopt and set forth the appropriate measure of damages for the type of damage that was actually incurred by the Russells in this case. We're also asking this court to reverse the district court's findings on each party's respective motions in limine relative to the experts designated by each party. And we ask that this court remand the case back down to the district court with an order to enter orders consistent with this court's holdings. So,
can I want to kind of get to the maybe an issue that precedes all this, but I also think it's kind of gets to the heart of the matter. Why did you choose to pursue an inverse condemnation as opposed to a tort claim?
Yeah. The inverse condemnation action was instituted because under Nebraska Revised Statute 76705 and also under the Nebraska Constitution, Article 1, Section 21, any time a property owner shows that they have been damaged as a result of a public use or for a public purpose, they are entitled to just compensation. And so I know that the lower court, and I think that's one of the errors, is it made a distinction between whether this action was brought under the Political Subdivisions Tort Claims Act as opposed to an inverse condemnation, as opposed to a specific action under the Nebraska Constitution. But the Nebraska law is clear that it doesn't matter, and there is no distinction in how my clients are awarded just compensation for their damages, so long as they make a showing that they've been damaged and that that damage was caused for a public use.
But so is there a difference in the measure of damages when you're looking at damage to vegetation as opposed to a taking or a damage to the property itself?
There is a difference, and that's actually the point that we're trying to make in this appeal, Your Honor, but the distinction doesn't matter on the type of cause of action. The cause of action, the facts that underlie theories of recovery, they're all the same. It's that in this case, in December of 2015, Franklin County came onto my client's property and cut down 67 trees. And so once you show that their property has been damaged, and that's what happened here, 67 trees were cut down, my clients are entitled to just compensation. And so, whether it was a tort, whether they were wrong, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, so if the county had elected to actually condemn the land and take ownership of that land, I realize it was all an error in terms of the parcels that they impacted, but if they had taken the land, what would have been the measurement of damages for that taking? Wouldn't it have been the fair market value of the land taken?
Yes, Your Honor, and we don't dispute that, but that's the error that the court committed.
But bear with me for a minute.
Sure.
So in this case, what would the fair market value of the 1.67 acres have been, given that even at your highest valuation, the evidence that was put in, the highest valuation, be about $2,000 an acre, so it'd be under $4,000, right?
It might. I guess I would suggest that there really was not, there is no evidence as to the value if you were to sever off just a small portion of the property. But see, that's the measure when you have a taking. But if you read the Nebraska Constitution carefully, Section 21, and if you read the statute 76705 carefully, they make a distinction. They say when there's a taking, or when there's damage.
Sure.
And a lot of the cases that we cite throughout our brief, Your Honor, reference that in 1875, the Nebraska Constitution was amended to add in that section that says not only a taking, but also damage. And so—
But so what was the change in the value of that land before the trees were cut. I mean, we can determine what the market value was before the trees were cut. What evidence was there as to the value of the land after the trees were cut? If I'm a reasonable buyer and I wanted to buy that land, would I have paid the same amount even though the trees were gone? Would the land have maintained the same value, or did it depreciate? Did it reduce
value? Well, and that's the point, is that it doesn't adequately, doing a measurement as to the decrease in the value of the actual dirt, the terra firma, that doesn't appropriately measure the damage that my clients incurred. They use this property for recreational purposes. All the evidence is that they use it for nature hikes, bird watching, hunting mushrooms, that sort of thing. And so the party harmed, they get to set out how they have been damaged. And in this case, they've been damaged with their trees being cut down. And so Nebraska law, the Supreme Court, has issued a case, Kikes versus Vandermeulen, that says when your trees are cut down, if you can replace or otherwise restore the property to its pre-existing condition,
but that wasn't an eminent domain case, was it? It wasn't an inverse condemnation case.
But see, and that's another distinction that I think the court erred in. Eminent domain is when it's just the exercise of the state's power to, in one instance, take property. But an inverse condemnation case is, inverse condemnation is not eminent domain by taking a parcel of property. It is, an inverse condemnation action is a shorthand way of saying that a property owner has had their property damaged. And so it's a key distinction, because you're talking about two completely separate forms of damage. One is where you've severed off a parcel of their property. And in that case, when the county or the state takes that property, they've acquired it in fee simple.
Well, there are inverse condemnation actions where if the landowner has to bring the action because the government has either taken property or affected the value of the property, and the state hasn't brought the action, the property owner can. So that's the inverse condemnation. And in that process, you can certainly, as the landowner, make a claim that the state may not have actually taken title to my land, but they have affected the value of my land. You know, there's cases of, you know, when the government puts a big smelly facility or whatever next to your land, right? They haven't necessarily taken the land, but they've affected the value of the land. That's kind of what you're talking about here in terms of the government. I mean, if this is going to come into the eminent domain category, which I know you're trying hard to get us out of it, but it's where you brought it.
Well,
you know, instead of it just being a tort action and asserting negligence, you brought it in this category.
That's true. It was brought in that category, because under that category, you don't have to make a showing of wrongdoing or negligence or fault.
Just damage.
Or even nuisance. You just have to show damage.
Yeah.
And so, but you also get the benefit of it, our pleading, that we also fall within the Nebraska Constitution, that we should be justly compensated for the damage. And awarding us $200 for the difference in 164-acre tract of land does not justly compensate my clients for the damage that actually occurred to them. The damage didn't occur by they lost, you know, 1.5 acres. The damage was that they had 67 trees cut down. And
well,
so we've offered a...
Go ahead,
Your Honor. We've offered expert testimony that sets forth, from a certified arborist, here's the method that you use to value these size of trees and the cost of reproduction and replacement. And so that's what we have offered to the court. And we think that that is the only competent evidence as to the actual damages incurred in this case.
But the court determined that, you know, you can't have both theories of damages. You can't have both a theory of damage under inverse condemnation and then this kind of separate theory of damages that you're claiming you should have, which falls more under like tort and negligence, right? And your experts, none of the three people that supplied affidavits or depositions in this case on your behalf, your client's behalf, testified to the reduction in the value of the land as a result of those 67 trees being removed.
Because that's correct, Your Honor. But that was because that wasn't the nature of the damage that they sustained. They didn't sustain a loss of their property terra firma, they lost the value of these trees. And so that's why we've offered that evidence. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court and counsel. My name is Brandy Johnson, and I represent the County of Franklin, Nebraska, the appellee in this matter. The Russells, the appellants, are arguing for this court to create a new measure of compensation rule in eminent domain cases that involve removal of trees during an access to private property by government. But this is a question that is already dictated and definitively answered by existing judicial precedent. The Walking Horse versus State case controls and is binding on this particular issue of damage to native trees that aren't deriving any profit to the landowner in an eminent domain case. I want to point out that the Walking Horse case is not limited to valuing property taken in fee simple. The analysis in that case extends to how destruction of trees can be valued as to remainder property that isn't being taken in fee simple, and that's an interpretation of the or damaged provision in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 21, related to inverse condemnation.
So if you have a parcel of land that's barren, except for this adjacent parcel that's all wooded or whatever, and if you combine the two, there's a value. If you remove the wooded area, there may be a new value for what's remaining, right? And that's kind of what I think your argument is here, is that it's really, was there a decrease in value to what remained? He kept all the land, the title to all the land.
Correct.
Did the value change because the trees were cut down?
Absolutely. That's precisely what was addressed in Walking Horse, and the determination made in that case by the court is that trees, even if they're being used for a special purpose like recreation, in that case it was as a shelter belt, they're considered vegetation. They aren't so unique as to justify any different valuation method other than diminution of the fair market value of the affected property.
And there was no evidence put on in that regard.
There was evidence from the county.
From
the county's
county
expert
side.
Corey Gerdes did speak to that issue, and that was what the district court adopted as the question of law, the type and measure of damages, and fixed the damages according to the county's expert testimony, because that was the only testimony that spoke to that issue. The Walking Horse case is clear that expert testimony that relates to the kind of valuation that the plaintiff's experts are offering, which is a repair, restoration, replacement cost value. The Walking Horse precedent held very expressly that that type of expert testimony is inadmissible because it's not tied to the fair market value of the affected land. And so the rule that the Russells are seeking here is directly contrary to Walking Horse and the subsequent precedent in the Curry versus Lewis and Clark Natural Resources District case was along the same line. There isn't any support found in the legislature and the eminent domain statutes for the rule that the Russells are seeking here. If the legislature had wanted to permit that type of damages, it certainly could have done so. I think the omission is deliberate by the legislature there in the statutes. There's no support found in the civil jury instructions for the type of damages and the measure of damages that the Russells are seeking here. And I want to hit on the Ketchus versus Vandermeulen case that the Russell's attorney has cited. That is a tort cause of action. This is not a trespass case. It was not pled as such. There are a number of distinctions between tort cases and eminent domain causes of action. There are different procedural prerequisites to bringing those types of two different types of suits. There's different elements. As counsel conceded, the tort cause of action involves wrongdoing by the government, whereas an eminent domain action involves an inherent right of government to enter property and either take it or damage it for the public use as the need may be. And so that is the distinction, and it justifies, it's logical that there would be a broader scope of damages available in a tort action versus an eminent domain context.
And you agree in this case that an action could have been brought under the Political Subdivisions Tort Claim Act if it had been filed?
It could have if it had been pled that way, but there's no question that it wasn't pled that way. The complaint in both county and district court was very clear that it didn't plead that cause of action, and I think that's conceded here.
Because there's no question in the facts that the county was negligent in its actions.
Well, the underlying facts that led us to where we are were essentially conceded by the county. Whether or not that establishes negligence,
yeah.
I wouldn't be prepared to concede
that
because it just wasn't pled.
I mean, they cut down the wrong trees.
Correct. They exceeded the scope of the permission that was given to them. And so we find ourselves in a bit of a different procedural context here just because of the way the underlying facts, the way the action was pled. I mean, the county wouldn't concede that every case where trees are taken for site distance would result in an eminent domain cause of action because there's other methods that the county can use in Chapter 39, Article 18 to take trees to improve site distance in a public nuisance context. It's just the way that things played out factually in this case is what led us to where we are. The county was willing to proceed under the cause of action.
Were any of the 67 trees that were taken down, were they the trees that should have been taken down, were those part of that 67, or was this 67 totally different trees?
To my understanding, the county was primarily concerned with improving site distance, and in so doing, it did take different trees than what permission was given to take.
So none of the 67 that were taken down were part of what should have been taken down?
I don't believe so under the evidence. But in the end, I don't think that's the ultimate issue here. What we're dealing with is the eminent domain.
How to measure the damages.
Is the measure of the damages, precisely. The other case relied on by the Russells is the Kula versus Prasoski case, and it's a bit puzzling that that case is also relied on because it is a different measure of damages.
It's lost profits.
In that case, which is exactly analogous to lost profits, which the county submits that if that rule were used in this case, it would result in a zero verdict for the Russells, given that it's undisputed that these particular native trees growing wild on the property weren't deriving any profit. Mm-hmm. For the Russells.
Kind of different from cropland.
Precisely, very different than cropland. There is no precise analogy that can be drawn between annual growing crops that are producing a profit and just wild native trees that are growing on property. And the plaintiff's experts didn't speak to the value of use for the period damage, which is the measure used in the Kula line of cases in any event. What the Russells are really doing here is seeking a measure of or a type of damages that exceeds the fair market value of the land had it been taken outright by the government. Mm-hmm. And the county submits that that would be a rule that would really create poor public policy in that it would essentially make it more beneficial for government to go out and permanently take land in fee simple rather than minimize the intrusion to the public landowner if it's feasible to do so by just temporarily entering and perhaps incurring some damage. And we submit that while it might benefit the Russells in this particular case to use that rule, and we submit that it would be a windfall recovery for the Russells if that rule were to be used, but in essence, it would have a widespread adverse impact on private landowners generally in future cases because, again, it would be encouraging government to maximize its intrusions on private property versus taking an option to minimize those intrusions. The motions in limine by the parties is also assigned as error by the plaintiffs. The district court didn't expressly rule on those motions, but implicitly found that the, and I think did characterize the Russell's expert witness testimony as irrelevant to the proper legal measure of damages, and we submit that that was a correct determination. There's some guidance found in the eminent domain statutes on that point where it is required that at the county appraiser level, at the beginning stages of the process, that the expert witness, one of the appraisers appointed, must be a credentialed real property appraiser. And that's true even though the eminent domain statutes may touch upon damage to private property versus real property, the statutes still require there to be a certified real property appraiser. And that dovetails with the Wachenhorst and the Curry precedent that requires expert testimony to be tied to the fair market value of the affected real estate. In my remaining moment here, I'll just mention that the county did submit as part a section of its brief a motion to strike that relates to the evidence of the county court appraiser's findings. We submit that the Russells are trying to argue that that county court appraiser finding is substantive evidence in this case and sort of urging the court to do a comparison between the county court appraiser's award and the district court award. We submit that that's not appropriate. The case law is clear, Rose versus City of Lincoln, that type of the evidence of the county court appraiser's findings isn't substantive evidence and can't be considered a substantive evidence by the district court or by this court. The Walk and Horse case is the most recent precedent. It's telling that the Walk and Horse case was decided after the Ketchus tort case that the Russells are citing. There's no mention of the Ketchus tort rule in that subsequent Walk and Horse case, which tells us that there is a distinction between the tort cause of action and the eminent domain cause of action. The Walk and Horse case, the diminution in fair market value, is the measure of just compensation that the court has established for native tree damage in a context like this, and we ask that the district court findings and order be affirmed. Thank you.
How much time do we have for rebuttal?
8 seconds.
Give you 30 seconds. And actually, I'm going to take you over a little bit more. Let me just ask you real quick. If this were damages to an automobile, it's cost of repair or difference in market value before and after, whichever is less, is that not also what we're dealing with here? You either have the cost to restore or you have the difference in market value immediately before, immediately after, whichever is less.
That's exactly it, Your Honor. That's a perfect analogy, but the Kaikes case talks about that. The total value of this parcel is over $300,000. That's in the record. You don't parcel off just the rear bumper and say, what's the value of that? $100, can repairing the car do that? There's no law in Nebraska that allows you to just separate out the one affected acre. It affected the entire parcel, which is $300,000. And so we're not asking that the court adopt any other rule other than what's already in cases that deal with damages to specific parts of their property.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for being here. We appreciate it. The matter is submitted, and we will take it under advisement. You are excused, and we are adjourned.